Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:33 here at WCCO, and my first guest tonight is Dan Kaufman. He is an author, and the name of the book is The Fall of Wisconsin, The Conservative Conquest of a Progressive Bastion, and the Future of American Politics. What is this all about? Well, this past Tuesday, Wisconsin held that spring election to settle races on board seats, mayoral challenges, and referendum issues. The most publicized race was the one for a vacant seat on the state Supreme Court. Now, Democrat Janet, let me hope I get it right, Protasiewicz defeated Republican Daniel Kelly to give the court a left lean for the first time since 2008. Now, what does this mean for the citizens of the state? And will it last? Well, we're going to talk to Dan Kaufman and find out. Welcome, Dan. How are you?
How are you doing? I'm fine.
I'm doing well, sir. I am so excited to have you on tonight because that's one of the big questions for me. What does this really mean to the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, as well as all the rest of us that are watching to see what would happen?
Well, I think it has huge implications, not just for the state, but for the entire country. Wisconsin has been under the most extreme partisan gerrymandering since 2011, when Republicans redistricted the state in a kind of secretive process at a law firm across the street from the state capitol. And that redistricting was reaffirmed in 2021 when the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which was then ruled by a conservative 4-3 majority, ruled that the state's map should have the least changes to the 2011 maps, which essentially perpetuated the agenda of the politicians that had designed that map in 2011. So that's huge. And the other factor, of course, is the abortion law. After the Dobbs decision, in a law from 1849 went into effect in the state, essentially, and it's prohibited all abortions except to save the life of a mother, and threatened to jail abortion providers with up to 6 years in prison, stripping them of their medical license. And I think most important for the rest of the country is, as probably most of your listeners know, Wisconsin is always closely divided, or has been recently, not always, in presidential elections. And the results of the 2020 presidential election, in which Wisconsin was one of three states to essentially determine the Electoral College victory of Joe Biden, came before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the court seriously entertained a challenge to those results that would have thrown out hundreds of thousands of ballots from Dane and Milwaukee counties, the state's largest and most Democratic, and only by a single vote were the election results maintained. So I think it has huge implications. There's also many other laws that may come under challenge, for example, the anti-labor legislation that Scott Walker passed famously in 2011 that essentially eliminated collective bargaining rights for public employees, voter ID law, and so on and so forth. The state was kind of a conservative laboratory for quite some time. So,
yeah, I remember when Wisconsin started changing, I mean, changing big time. And I'm just wondering, is it ever going to change back to what it was 50 years ago or even 30 years ago? It's so different now. And we're seeing this all over the country. That's what's so amazing to me. But one thing about Janet Protasiewicz, who won this time, it's a big win. I'm just curious to know, are there other voices now in this court that would, you know, work to make sure that Wisconsin would stay where it is right now? Or is it that we're going to see another change in, what, 4 years or something like that? Is this something that's going to last? Because usually they say once you get on the Supreme Court, you aren't it for life.
Well, in Wisconsin, judges are elected for 10-year terms, and there will be another election in 2025 that could switch it back. Democrats have been remarkably successful in the past 5 years. They've won 15 of 18 statewide elections, including this one that just happened. So I think there's been a change, and it largely, a lot of it is a backlash against essentially 12 years of minority rule. The hold on the state legislature has increased, it sort of culminated in anger and sort of hope on the progressive side. And I think they saw in this election an opportunity to change some of the structural things that have been imposed upon the state. A lot of it from powerful conservative donors and think tanks, and much of that money has come from out of state. So I think there's a resentment that kind of has been percolating for a long time that sort of burst into the open. And Daniel Kelly, the conservative opponent, was not a very attractive candidate for a lot of people. He was very extreme. He was involved with consulting with the Republican Party on the January 6th. The state Republican Party was considering a plan to send a slate of fake electors that would support Donald Trump. And so I think there was many reasons, but I think the victory is hugely significant, as is the margin of the victory. And whether or not it represents a fundamental sea change or just a temporary one remains to be seen. But I think there will be big changes afoot because the governor is a Democrat and now the Supreme Court is controlled by liberals. So,
you know, as soon as someone wins a political fight like Janet, it's just quite amazing what people will do. They'll start immediately hearing what she said before and really hold her to it. So if she is saying something like, you know, the voices of now, or I am going to be, it's all about delivering justice and bringing common sense. You know, you wrote about this. And I just keep asking myself, if we make promises in any position political, especially this one, is it that we have to stick to it? Or if we don't, what are the consequences for this? Because right now, many Democrats are just living in this joy that she won. One point, just like you said, one point. She's living in this thing. And we are all that are Democrats are saying, yes, thank goodness. But then what happens if all of a sudden she slips? What do you say?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, there's obviously politicians don't always follow through. And on the other hand, there's a 10-year term for a Supreme Court justice. So I think the pressures will be, you know, I mean, I think it's a combination. You know, obviously things have, the race is officially nonpartisan. That has been a farce for a long time. And it was quite clear where each candidate stood on the major issues that will come before the court. You know, I really don't know how to answer your question because I think, you know, there's some insulation in the state Supreme Court from immediate political pressures, namely the 10-year term. And I think that there's a lot. She was very clear pretty much about her position. She was very strongly pro-labor. She was called the maps rigged, and she loudly proclaimed that she was pro-choice. So I don't think there's going to be I don't see in what way that she would probably rule differently. Obviously, she has to, you know, follow the law, and but that is interpretable. I mean, the Wisconsin state constitution suggests that there's a remedy for every harm. Well, under those conditions, you could certainly argue that voters have been harmed by the maps in the state, right? Which, you know, so, I mean, and I think women have been harmed. You know, abortion providers are under an incredible, stressful situation where they face, even if they perform an abortion to save the life of the mother, there's a legal cloud hanging over them in which they could face up to 6 years in prison. That's and right. Lose their medical license. So I think there's very little, most of the state also, I think you can see the distortion of the gerrymandering in the state's politics. 2/3 of the state or more favor abortion in all or more most cases. 2/3 or more are against the want a fair map commission to determine the state's districting boundaries. So I think the gerrymandering has really distorted Wisconsin's politics and kind of presented the state as sort of a deep South anti-labor stronghold when the population doesn't want those things. Now, how far they'll be able to, as you say, turn it back is unclear, you know, but it is hugely significant because the court's role in affirming these changes that have been going on since 2011 has been really consequential, particularly since the governor won in 2018 and defeated Scott Walker That was Tony Evers. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was huge as well. I guess for me, as a woman who is fighting politically on so many fronts, I keep asking myself, where do we go next and how do we keep it going? You've got so many that are angry. You've got so many that are angry in a whole different way. It's like two conversations are going on and nobody's really talking. Do you know what I mean? That's the challenge for me. And as I've always wanted to run for a political office, and it scares me every time I read these stories about the things they say about women and how awful it is sometimes. Now, you know how politics work, whether it's in Wisconsin or other states, I'm not sure. But it is very clear that women are treated differently from men when it comes to running for a political space. And I wonder if you agree with me on that.
Well, I think there's a lot of misogyny in politics. I think that in general, the whole political system is deeply flawed in these days, largely because of dark money. I think racism and misogyny are useful tools to the right in order to gin up a base that's, you know, might share those sentiments, but also has been sort of hollowed out by economic insecurity. I mean, a lot of jobs have been lost in Wisconsin, and people, the area all across the Rust Belt is really ripe for resentment, the politics of resentment. So I think those things can really flourish in that context. You saw a lot of racism directed at Mandela Barnes, the Senate candidate that lost narrowly to Ron Johnson, and you saw a lot of misogynistic attacks on Janet Protasiewicz as well. I do think, though, one of the larger issues is just the amount of money on both sides, dark money, that has fueling these increasingly vitriolic campaigns. And a lot of it is directed at women, but I think in general it doesn't serve our society very well when it's directed at anyone. And I think most of the campaign on the ad front in Wisconsin was sort of both sides attacking each other for being soft on crime. Janet has many more positive ads than Dan Kelly, but her first ad was attacking him for defending some people accused of child molestation. So it's not a very enlightened campaign because of a lot of dark money, and I wish it was different. And I do decry the misogyny. And I think, until we get the money out of politics, these kinds of campaigns will flourish. And yeah, it's increasingly scary out there. I agree with you.
It is. It's really frightening. I have to say, Dan Kaufman, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, you are a contributor to The New Yorker and author of the book we have talked about just a moment ago, or mentioned at least, The Fall of Wisconsin, The Conservative Conquest of a Progressive Bastion, and the Future of American Politics. And I thank you for joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, and I do hope we can call on you again in the future. Thank you so much.
No problem. It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right, sir. Good night.
Okay.